Miller?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Hunziker, you may then approach and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Hunziker from Norby and Welding, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Paul Hoagland. This case arises from a Nebraska Wage Payment and Collection Act claim in which Mr. Hoagland asserted a claim for unpaid wages over three school years, beginning back in 2015, that were not paid to him. And it is not in dispute that Mr. Hoagland was not paid in compliance with the salary schedule that was negotiated as a part of the collective bargaining agreement. The parties moved for cross motions for summary judgment, and there was no genuine issue of material fact. But the summary judgment was granted in favor of the school district, the appellee here today, on the basis, on really two bases. One is that there was a clause in the collective bargaining agreement which limited essentially salary recovery to only errors that are discovered and reported and only made the salary correction retroactive to the year in which they were discovered and reported. And then the district court also made their decision based on the imposition of a grievance procedure, which was followed by Mr. Hoagland, albeit untimely. Our position is that those two things should not bar Mr. Hoagland's recovery under the Nebraska Wage Payment and Collection Act.
Can I take the second rationale first?
Certainly.
Okay. You're saying that the appellant was not timely. And in what respect was he not timely? Everybody's talking about 10 days. Is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Occurrence plus 10 days to have a meeting. Is that the provision to which you refer?
That's correct, Your Honor. So that's the grievance procedure that is passed. It's adopted by the Board of Education of Millard and referred to in the collective bargaining agreement. And so that grievance procedure is a grievance procedure that exists on the basis of the...
It's in the CBA.
It's referred to in the CBA. The full language of it is not there. And in fact, the language in the CBAs that are relevant here says that the board can still change that grievance procedure, but that the bargaining agent can then, for the remainder of the contract term, stick with the old grievance procedure or go with the new one.
Is all this in the record?
I do believe it is, Your Honor.
The CBA is in the record?
The CBA is...
Or I guess I would say in particular, maybe the, chapter 45 dot something or other, right? That's the section to which you're referring.
I believe that's correct,
Your Honor. So if it's untimely, why would that not conclude the matter?
My position is that imposing the strict adherence of the timeliness of a grievance procedure, imposing that on an individual right that was conferred on my client by statute, and then the collective bargaining agent, the union, negotiating that right effectively away by imposing a 10-day timeline is improper.
So you're kind of merging both features. You can't have 10 days if it's an individual right. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and to be fair, my argument really for both issues is just about the same, that the union cannot agree to a clause that would limit my client's right to seek an individual remedy, nor can the union and the employer impose a strict grievance deadline to the detriment of his individual right under the Nebraska Wage Payment Collection Act.
So the CBA is really completely irrelevant. You've got a statutory right, and that's what you're proceeding.
I will say that I won't agree with you that it's completely irrelevant, because the collective bargaining agreement establishes the salary terms, right? And effectively, my position to you all would be that the union should absolutely have the right to negotiate pay, should absolutely have the right to negotiate terms and conditions of employment, but should not have the right to negotiate away individual ability to see their way to the steps of a courthouse.
I want to take you back just a step. Your client's employment relationship with the school district is based on a written contract. the written contract, that written contract in turn incorporates the collective bargaining agreement, correct?
That is mostly accurate, Your Honor. The only small change there, my client has an individual contract as a teacher with the district. It continues pursuant to law. I believe that his individual contract only refers to the salary schedule. I don't believe that there is a provision within that individual contract that subsumes and completely refers to any collective bargaining agreement.
And I guess where I'm headed with this is I want to talk with you about what specifically the Nebraska Wage Payment and Collection Act protects. It protects the contract. It doesn't protect, it's not a standalone right. It's a remedy provided by statute to effectuate the private contract, or in this case, public contract, between the employer and the employee. Do you disagree with any of that discussion?
While I will wholly agree with you that the Wage Payment and Collection Act protects an agreement, right? My position would be that this clause in that collective bargaining agreement cannot be and should not be enforced against an individual's right to pursue the collection of his wages.
It's not, if I may follow up with Justice Castle, under the Act, the definition of wages, right, mm-hmm. 48.1229 sub 6 has a couple of features, right? And compensation, this is all about compensation, right? And previously agreed to conditions stipulated have been met, then maybe you're going to collect, right?
Right.
And one of the conditions that you have stipulated to be met is to do step one within 10 days.
Fair.
And did it happen?
No. The grievance procedure clearly did not happen within 10 days, and I'm not going to stand up here and try to make
sense. Is that not a condition that you was stipulated to?
My position is that
y'all
is...
Y'all never agreed to this step one, step two, step three thing?
My position is that it's an unlawful condition because it waives his individual remedy by the imposition of a union agreement that he didn't sign the paper to, essentially. It's his right.
Ten days to seek wages to which you very well may be entitled, you're saying, is unenforceable, or the fact that you can only collect errors in the current year is unenforceable?
Both, Your Honor. Yes to both. Because those are two conditions. Again, my position is that the Wage Payment and Collection Act protects an agreement and that it provides an individual right and or remedy to an employee, because the definition of an employee there.
But there's a process you've agreed to, and if you meet the process, then you're going to go on to the substance, and the 10 days, I believe, to be the process.
And those processes were agreed to by a union, not necessarily by my client, right? He's a part of the bargaining unit, but it was the bargaining agent that imposed these two hurdles before his individual right to pursue collection of his wages. And so my position here in front of this court is that the union should not be able, just like the court has held in Barentine with the Fair Labor Standards Act, which is different.
Those cases to which you refer, like Barentine, right, those are like CBAs cannot waive minimum wage. That's a big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, or the Eighth Circuit Varner case, right? You can't waive Civil Rights Act.
Right.
Okay. I'm not saying money's not important, but there are waivers associated with money that can be bargained.
Certainly. And I think one of the cases that I cited to you, if I recall correctly, was Hoagland, which talked about how certain rights that are personal, not merely economic, cannot be waived. And again, the distinction I'm making here for this court, certainly there is an economic component here. But, and I think that the union can negotiate the economic components, but they can't negotiate or release, effectively, his claim by imposing either this clause or the grievance procedure as a procedural hurdle for him availing himself of the court. And so those two arguments really do tie together.
Thank you.
My client would request that this court overturn the decision made by the district court and return it for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Miller, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jeff Miller, Young and White Law Office of Omaha, here on behalf of the Millard School District. I guess I don't know where to start, either with Judge Castle or Judge Miller, but both of those things are in my argument. And so I'll start with Judge Castle. The Collection Act does not create any independent, individualized statutory right to wages. It creates remedial procedures for the resolution of disputes between employers and employees as to whether wages are owed and what amount those wages may be. And all of that is centered on what is or was the agreement between the employer.
And that is referenced to the definition of wages, the conditions you stipulated to your contract.
Yeah, there's three things in a Wage Collection Act. It has to be compensation, labor for services. It has to be based on a prior agreement between the employer and employee.
And that the conditions have been met.
And any stipulated conditions by the employer that the employee has to fulfill have been fulfilled. So
I think maybe opposing counsel is saying under conditions have to be met. I don't need to meet 10 days because ultimately my goal is worthy.
The grievance procedure, the grievance procedure is part of the collective bargaining act.
Is he bound by the CBA?
Yes, he is, absolutely.
Okay, and we were focusing on 40, I beg your pardon, and we were talking about 4325.1.
Yeah, that's Miller Rule, Board Rule 4325.1, okay. And it establishes the procedures when an employee has a grievance or a complaint about a condition or a problem with employment. And to initiate those grievance procedures, they have to be started within 10 work days of the last event giving rise to the grievance. The last event giving rise to the grievance of the district not paying for back pay was in April 2019, when for the third time the district informed the appellant that there was errors in his pay, that we were correcting him for that year, that this is how much we're going to pay you for that back pay for that year, but we're not going back to previous years. And there were errors in previous years, but we're not going back to them because the collective bargaining agreement doesn't allow us to do that. He did not implement his grievance for 11 and a half months till April 2020. It's
did
clearly
he, is there, 10 what,
days.
What does the record say about meeting step one? Occurrence plus 10 days, is that right? That's step one?
That's right.
Okay, what happened?
He just filed the grievance in April of 2020.
All right, so some places in your brief you're saying he's not timely. What is the time frame to which you believe he did not adhere?
He did not implement the grievance procedures within 10 work days of April 2019 when it was made clear to him that he was not going to get paid for prior year's back pay.
Just hypothetically, what if he had complied with the 10 days? Where would you be then? Understanding that's not the case here.
Yeah, that's not the case. Well, if he would have complied with the 10 days, obviously, well, we wouldn't have denied the grievance because it was late, but we certainly would have stuck with the grievance was not proper because the collective bargaining agreement restricts us to paying correcting errors only for the current school year.
You keep saying it restricts you from doing it. Does that mean the school district could not do it? You were precluded?
We are precluded, Your Honor. When you have a collective bargaining agreement, you got to treat all employees the same under that collective bargaining agreement. So for all these years that we've had that provision in our collective bargaining agreement with the teachers, which has been the last 10, we're prohibited from doing anything other than following that salary error provision, which is we only pay back for the current school year. And it's reciprocal. We also only go back for pay back if we've overpaid teachers only for that school year. We can't go back to prior years, and we can't go back to prior years to get back pay from the teachers, and we can't, teacher can't go back prior years for back pay.
So is the burden then on, I think everybody agrees that this gentleman was entitled to wages for the back years if he'd been paid correctly. So is it his responsibility to somehow figure that out in those prior years and grieve at that point in time?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the employee's responsibility to make sure he or she's getting paid correctly. The district and the union have implemented procedures where every year the district, in August, before the beginning of the school year, advises the teachers, there's new wages, there's a new collective bargaining agreement, there's been changes, please check the collective bargaining agreement, here's where you can find it, please check your pay, contact HR if there's a problem, and then we give them what we call a salary calculator tool where they can get on the computer and they can plug in a few factors to see if their pay is correct. And if it is, great, and if it's not, then they need to make that known to the HR department.
So do I understand factually in this case, the school district somehow discovered that they had been paying people wrong, or is there something else in the record that tells us how somebody somewhere discovered somebody was being paid?
In October 2018, the union was analyzing salaries of teachers and pay and whatnot for upcoming collective bargaining negotiations, and they discovered a half dozen teachers that were underpaid, and they brought it to our attention, and we investigated it, and we corrected those, and one of them was the appellant. And so that's where the process started. But the whole argument of the appellant here is that the Collection Act somehow creates an individualized, independent statutory right to wages. And Judge Castle, you hit it dead on when you said, no, it doesn't. It creates remedies and procedures, but it doesn't create a statutory right all by itself.
Well, and I'm curious about the relationship between the individual and the union and the school district. Should the individual in this case have attacked the union contract or the constitutionality of the statutes that put an individual into a bargaining unit and then at least arguably take some rights away from the individual?
A collective bargaining agreement cannot take away established statutory rights like the right not to be discriminated against or the right to be to minimum wage or overtime payments. But the Collection Act is not one of those statutory rights. And the case of...
So I guess ask the question again, should this individual have attacked the constitutionality of those statutes?
His complaint with the district court was only a strict Wage Collection Act action. It does not allege anything about this provision or the collective bargaining agreement is illegal or it's invalid. That wasn't argued in the district court. It was argued that it was a waiver. There was nothing about this salary error provision was illegal or invalid. That suddenly arises on appeal. But let me reference this court to what you stated in the case of Maloney versus American Business Information, which is not cited in our brief, I apologize, 262 Nebraska, 733, and I think this says exactly what Judge Castle says. In that case, a 2001 case, this court wrote, the act is primarily remedial in nature, providing specific procedures for the enforcement of substantive rights to compensation for work performed which arise not from the statute, but from the employment relationship itself.
And so hence, under the definition of wages, it's compensation to which you would be entitled if you agreed to stipulated conditions and they have been met. One condition of which is, here's how to complain. 10 days after the occurrence.
One condition of which is if there's an error, you have to bring it to our attention in that school year. Otherwise, we're not going back to prior school years to pay back pay, and we're not going back to prior years to recover payments that we overpaid.
Let me ask you something. What is the significance of, you seem to have had, the parties seem to have had competing proposed stipulations of fact. Is that right?
That's correct.
Was there a merged version of stipulated facts, or you have two competing versions?
I believe there's two completed versions.
Okay, and what is the significance of that? Are those judicial admissions, whatever they may say?
Yeah, all those were admitted into evidence.
Okay, and the reason I ask is that in the appellant's proposed stipulated facts, I believe he says that November of 18 is the occurrence.
Well, then that makes the 10 days even worse.
Well, summary judgment, let's go with April of 19. Nevertheless, your argument is the same?
The same.
Giving the plaintiff appellant every benefit of the
of the doubt.
Facts at this point in time.
We say absolutely in April of 2019, it was made abundantly clear that we were not going back to prior years and that this error existed in prior years and nothing happened for 11 and a half months. And that's a condition proceeding to starting the judicial action. That condition proceeding doesn't exist, so the judicial proceeding falls. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments in Hogan versus School District 28-0017 of Douglas County. Counsel, you are excused. And the court will go on to the case of, we'll pronounce this, Bohatch versus Benish Service Company. I am recused in this case, and Justice Stacy is recused in this case. So Judge Carson will return to the bench, and also Judge Butler, also from the 9th Judicial District, this time from Grand Island, will be joining the court, and Justice Miller-Lerman will preside. So give